Okay, shall we start inshallah? Yeah? Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Right. Alhamdulillah. Second to last lesson. And. Did we do exemption from fasting? We didn't do that, yeah. It was up from there.
We got up to it.
Good. So the previous week we did about those fasts that which if one does, it doesn't require to redo those fasts, and it doesn't officiate the fast, but it is something which is disliked and shouldn't be done. Now, the chapter that we are about to do is about exemption from fasting. Basically, when we are allowed not to fast, although in some circumstances it is better to fast, although the exemption is there. If one doesn't want to fast, they can do so. They have the opportunity, or the facility is there for them not to fast. So this is the list that is going to be mentioned. The first one is: the following people are exempted from fasting in Ramadan. A sick person who fears that the illness will worsen. So we are talking about the people that, although fasting is better, but still the permissibility of to not fast is there. So number one, a sick person who fears that the illness will worsen, meaning that if a person thinks that his illness will increase, okay, we're not talking about a person where if he keeps a fast he will die, then he's not allowed to fast at all. It is haram for him to fast. But we're talking about a person who will live, but his illness will worsen. Now there's two types of way where the illness can worsen. Either the illness that he already has will increase, or he may not have an illness, but he may become ill, or that illness won't increase, but he may get another illness from it. So in all of these scenarios, if that's the case, then he doesn't have to fast. But this can't be just on assumption. Either it has to be due to past experience, or similar cases have been found with other people that with the similar types of diseases, if they kept the fast, this will happen. Or a Muslim doctor, not a non-Muslim, a Muslim and a practicing Muslim doctor tells you that if you fast in this situation, it will increase your illness, or it will delay your recovery. It will delay your recovery. So, not any old doctor. Because the reason why I say that is that a non-Muslim doctor will not know the actual weight of Ramadan. He will not understand the importance of Ramadan. Hence, they would just tell you, don't keep you, oh, this is fine. If you go to a Muslim, practicing Muslim, they will find out ways for you where you can keep your fast and at the same time not in any way increase or the illness. So I've got examples here. They went to a doctor, said, oh, you're diabetic, you can't fast. And when they went to another Muslim doctor, he goes, look, when you're about to keep your fast, that time decrease your medicine. When you're about to break your fast, increase your medicine. So they tell you all this because they know the importance of fasting. They know that, you know, fasting shouldn't be, you know, neglected or left out just for small reason. So they understand that. So they will try to make ways for you. unless they are, you know, pretty much sure that in any situation, there is no solution to it other than not fast. Then they will tell you. So that's why it's important that either from past experience that individual knows that if he fasts, he will basically prolong his illness, or the illness will increase, or he will the recovery will be delayed, or the doctor tells him. A Muslim, practicing Muslim doctor tells him. Also, if a person, for example, has, like a woman, she has a monthly cycle, and she knows in the first 10 days of the month she has. So, a woman expecting that decides not to fast. It is permissible for her. She doesn't have to wait for the actual menstruation to start. She knows, first of every month, my menstruation will start for the 5-6 days, whatever. So on the first, she didn't keep the fast, thinking that her menstruation will start today. She is allowed. It's not that we have to wait until the menstruation will start. You know, menstruation will start at 12 o'clock, 11 o'clock, it will start that day. And that's so normally. Okay? But if it didn't happen that day, there's no expiation or you didn't fast or anything, no. She just have to redo that fast another day. A pregnant woman or nursing woman with the condition for each that she has a legitimate fear for the baby or for herself. So if it's a pregnant woman or a nursing woman, nursing meaning somebody who's actually feeding the child. It could be the mother or somebody else. So any one of them, if they have a fear, and again it has to be legitimate fear, either through past experience or through similar experience of a similar person happening to somebody else, and this is her first time, understand? Or the doctor says that this is, and again it has to be a Muslim doctor. It could be the mother of a feeding a mother who breastfeeds of the child, or another person who is breastfeeding a child. Not the mother of that child, but she breastfeeds. Again, because she's breastfeeding, although maybe not her child, but that child's in danger if she doesn't feed her, or if she stops, if she fasts, then her milk decreases so much that it could cause a problem to the child. Then in that kind of situation, she is allowed not to fast. One who is undergoing severe thirst from which he fears death. So if there's such a severe thirst or such a severe hunger that he fears that death will happen, then it is haram to fast in that situation. It is haram. Now, before I go any further, the situation that which if it happens, exemptions comes into place is 9. If I just give out the list, one is illness, which we are just mentioning. Another is journey, which we will explain. Another one is ikrah, meaning somebody forces you not to fast. And another one is obviously pregnancy. Again, the pregnancy is not just normal pregnancy. It's a pregnancy where either from past experience she found that when she did fast, it causes complication, or it causes a problem, or it causes such weaknesses within her that there's a problem that she can give a miscarriage, something like that. Not just a mere assumption or something like that, no. Either through her past experience or similar experience or a similar situation that happened to somebody else, it's exactly the same, you know, maybe in the family or something like that. Or basically a doctor tells her that, you know, you got, due to your present complication or previous complication, blah 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 blah, you know, a Muslim doctor has to be. So when it comes to the when it comes to such masail and such propositions, you have to, you should seek the advice of a Muslim doctor, not just any old doctor. And rida' means breastfeeding a child, hunger, thirst, and old age, and fighting in the path of Allah, or fighting any enemy. And if you know that you're going to fight the enemy, and if you're not strong enough, then obviously you're going to have problems fighting. So these are the nine reasons where exemption can come into force. Or a traveler, yet for him to fast is more preferable if it does not harm him. So when a person is traveling, and while he's traveling, Fajr happens, then he is allowed not to fast. But if Fajr happens before he even starts his travel, he intends to travel at 11 o'clock in the afternoon, in the morning, or 1 o'clock in the afternoon, okay, his flight is at 1 o'clock. So when fasting started, he's still at home. So he's not allowed to break the fast. He's not allowed to break the fast. The only time when he's allowed to not keep the fast is when he's already in the journey. So when suhoor starts, he's in the journey already. For example, yeah.
I thought you said if he has planned to travel, even if the travel doesn't actually start until after Fajr, he can intend to not fast that day.
No.
No.
He's only allowed.
So he has to fast.
Then.
He travels.
If he starts to travel before that, he's basically a traveler at the time of fasting. So if he's traveling 11 o'clock, he's not a traveler then, is he? He's only intending to travel. So at the moment, he's a non-traveler, but intend to travel. So he's not allowed to break the fast. Unless the traveling becomes so exhaustive to him, then he's allowed. And you know, it's becoming detrimental to his health. Right? But if he's traveling already, and suhoor starts, then he's allowed not to fast. Although fasting may not cause any complication to him, but he still is allowed. Whereas if it's the opposite way around, where he's not traveling, okay, then he has to keep the fast, and once he starts to travel, if he finds that there's too much complication, he's causing havoc to his health, then he's allowed to break the fast.
What about if you knew that you were doing something like a flight to the west side where you're adding so many hours more?
Again, unless if fly for fortune. Or deliberately leave your city, camp outside the airport or something, so I don't have to fast, yeah?
For the purpose of being a traveller, does it start from, like, as soon as you start your journey, or only after you've passed the 48 Sharia mark?
Once left your town.
Left your town.
Okay. Although you haven't passed the 48 Sharia. So once you left Reading, you're a traveller.
Yeah.
As long that you intend to travel more than 48 Sharia mark.
You leave your town.
Huh? Well, someone like who lives at the border, like him, just walk down 5 minutes, I'm out of the border now, right? Bring all the food, mom, drop it off here, I'm just here, by the motorway. Then, so basically, technically speaking, once you left your border, you're on your journey, that's it. But if you're within your border of your town, then you haven't left you're not musafir then. So if you just live right by the border, then there's some advantages. You just have to step out of the garden. I've done my starting my journey. So, yeah, is that okay?
Yeah.
Even if he's, you know, even if he's someone traveling because he wants to commit a sin, still, the mere fact that he's traveling, you know, to do a sin is not a good thing, but nevertheless, traveling will allow a person to not fast. If one who breaks the fast due to a valid reason, valid excuse, as listed above, passes away before having the chance to make up the days missed, then it is not mandatory to make up those days. So, if a person breaks the fast because of valid reason that we mentioned, okay, so a woman who is menstruation, or a sick man, or a sick woman for that matter, didn't fast for 10 days because he or she was ill, and after he or she became better, he only had 4 days where he could have kept the fast. Then after that, he had an accident. Went into coma. He never had a chance to keep more than 4 days. So those 4 days, he would have to give fidya only for those 4 days, because the other 6 days he never had a chance to keep them. Because after 4 days he went into coma, or after 4 days he died. So only those 4 days he has to give fidya. Meaning he has to give sadaqah fitr amount of money or food to a poor person. It's only those 4 days. So the amount of days he had the opportunity to fast, it is those days. So if a person couldn't fast for 10 days, and after those 10 days he became ill straight away, and after illness he passed away, he never had a chance to fast those 10 days. So what would happen is that he don't have to do wasiyah. Wasiyah means he doesn't have to make a will and let his family know that from his one third of his wealth they need to give fidya for so many fasts or so many whatever. Yeah? So that's what he's trying to say. So if one who breaks the fast due to a valid excuse, as listed above, passes away before having the chance to make up the days missed, then it is not mandatory to make up those days. Okay? So he doesn't have to make up those days. Obviously he's passed away, he can't make any days. But what it means is that he doesn't have to give fidya for those days which he never had the opportunity to keep.
Is fidya like the expiation thing?
Fidya is another way of expiation. And that this is by giving in the way of charity. Because obviously you never had the chance to fast. Fidya, and as I say, when making up fast in general, one does not have to perform them consecutively. If a person couldn't fast for 10 days in the month of Ramadan, when he does redo those fasts or make up, he doesn't have to do it consecutively. So he can keep one this week, one another next week, to following month, whatever. But he has to make up the full 10 days. But he doesn't have to do it 10 in one go, yes.
Is there a limit, the days must be made up before 1 year?
There's no limit, but it is preferred that he does it quickly as possible. Quickly as possible, because it is an act of worship, number one, and it is duty. So one should try the level best to fulfill the duty as quickly as possible. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay, next one. There are four types of fast where one has to do it consecutively. It's not written here, but I thought I'd just tell you. Number one is Ada'i Ramadan, meaning the Ramadan fast. The Ramadan fast, obviously, it has to be kept in one go. You can't okay, 10 days of Ramadan, keep it in Shawwal. No, you got to keep it in Ramadan. Kafaratul Zihar. Those kafara which is done in zihar is where a person says to his wife that you are like my mom or something like that, and because of that kafara. That's another chapter. But when a person has to keep fast because of saying something like that, again he has to do it consecutively. Somebody kills a person by mistake, then when he doesn't have the means of freeing a slave, then he has to keep 60 fasts. Again, that has to be done consecutively. Again, when a person breaks his qasam, when he does an oath on Allah, and then he breaks that oath, he has to keep so many fasts, 10 fasts. Again, that has to be done consecutively. Where, for what?
When you're swearing. When
breaking oath? 10 days.
10 days.
Yeah.
Where does it say that? It's not
an issue.
That was just extra. Good. Right. The fidya payment for a very old person who is unable to fast is a half a sa'. Sa' is an Arabic measurement, which is 2.2 kilos of wheat, or the equivalent in monetary value for each day. So like I was saying, when I mentioned about those days where if a person who had the chance of fasting but didn't fast, then he has to do wasiya, he has to do what you call a will, that for each fast, the amount of sadaqah fitr has to give him charity. So he just explained what is that fidya, which I just mentioned, sadaqah fitr, 2.2 kgs of wheat, or equivalent money, which we give like £3, although that is a bit generous. But
£2.2
kilograms of wheat now. £1.50, £2. Yeah. Although the right £3 is but it's a bit less.
It's quite cheap, isn't it?
Yeah. So that is what the fidya we're talking about. Now, again, it's the same, that same very same fidya an old person would give if he or she knows that cannot make the fast, because he or she is so old that at any point of the year he or she will not be able to make fast. But if it's such that may not be able to fast in, may not be able to do the fast in summer, but can do the fast in winter because days are short, then they have to fast in winter. They have to make up those fasts in winter. But if it's such that they cannot make up the fast throughout the whole year, not possible. For somebody they got cancer or whatever, and the illness is such, they have to take medicine, blah, 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 blah. And then they can't do it, and it's getting worse or whatever. Then they have to give, what? Sadaqah fitr for each fast. For each fast, they give sadaqah fitr. So that is for those people who have no ability to do them on any other day. But if somebody can do them in winter, then they have to do them in winter. So that's what it is. Also, when you give this payment of food to a person, to a poor person, you don't have to make him the owner. You can just give him permission. Well, you think, what is the difference between permission and owner? It's like, for example, permission means you're allowed to eat. If I give you, say, a dawah, invitation to my house, I would eat. Are you actually allowed to take all the food at home?
No.
No, because he's giving you an invitation to come and eat here, not to take it with you. But if I give it to you here, then you can do what you want with it. So that's the difference between having permissibility of eating and ownership. So when it comes to zakah, when it comes to sadaqah fitr, like in Ramadan when you get sadaqah fitr, there you have to make sure that he or she becomes, the poor person has to become ownership of that. But with this, you don't have to make him ownership. You can bring 60 people to your house and feed, eat. And they eat food and go. Whatever left over is yours. They can't take anything. So that's the difference between those two sadaqah fitr. A person performing a voluntary fast may break it without an excuse, according to one narration. So according to one narration, if a person is keeping voluntary fast, then without breaking, without any excuse, he or she can break it. But according to the preferred narration, and according to the Ahnaf, it's a no. Once you started it, once you start the optional, although you don't have to, but once you do start, you need to finish it unless something happens to you, or you become ill, or whatever, whatever, whatever.
In the case I got to make up one day for Ramadan of last year, and I start this day fasting to make up, and then I stop because I changed my mind. What's happening? What's gonna happen?
You can't break it.
I can't.
No.
But what if I already did it?
If you broke it, you have to do another one.
I mean, obviously, because it's a day that you make up one day of Ramadan from last year. So obviously you've got to make it, but is there a punishment?
No. Well, it's a sin, but there's no expiation that you have to do.
No, okay.
Yeah.
But you cannot, yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, you
shouldn't break it, no. Once you started it, any fast, once you started it, you shouldn't break it. Okay? That's what he's trying to say.
You have to think about it before making intention, I think. You have to think about it before making intention for the last thing.
Yeah. That's it.
You shouldn't break it. Unless, like I said, unless there's an excuse.
Yeah, feeling good.
That's the whole point. That's an excuse. Yeah. But there's one, when it's a voluntary, if you're redoing a fast that you've missed, then in any case you shouldn't break it. If it's a voluntary, then there are reasons where you can break it, okay, other than the reason that we mentioned. That's what I'm saying. Entertaining guests is a valid excuse for both the host and guests if one breaks a voluntary fast after having started in any case. So, if somebody has started voluntary fast, a nafal, and knows that he's been invited to a certain, say, certain person's house, and if he goes and he doesn't eat there, the other brother will get upset. I've cooked all this food, now why is he fasting for? He knows he's got to come to my house. Now he wants to show himself he's being part. Obviously, he's going to be upset, isn't he? So in that kind of situation, he's allowed to break the fast. So maybe by mistake he kept the fast. Yeah? And then we're like, oh, I'm gonna go to Dawat. And if I don't go and eat there, he's gonna kick up a big fuss, or he's gonna be upset, you know? And blah blah blah. That kind of situation. Or, for example, the host, he's invited somebody, he comes and the host doesn't eat. Then again, he might feel uncomfortable. You know, my host is not eating, I'm eating. I can't eat, but he might not eat properly. He might feel bad. Then the host should also take care of that. And he's allowed to break it. In any case, if so, it is mandatory wajib for him to make it up. So he has to make it up though. If he breaks it for that reason, he still has to redo it. Except for the days in which it is prohibited to fast. So those 5 days where five days where fasting is prohibited, which is the 2 days of Eid, Eid al-Adha, Eid al-Fitr, and the 3 days of Tashriq, after Eid al-Adha, the 3 days, those 5 days, fasting on those days is haram. One is not allowed to fast. So if one does fast for some reason, forgot it was day of Tashriq or something, then he should break it. If he breaks it, he doesn't have to redo that fast. If a person makes an unspecified vow to fast, or a vow to fast upon fulfillment of a particular condition which then occurs, then he must fulfill his vow. So if a person makes, okay, I'm gonna fast for 3 days next month, and he made it vowed on the business, he says it, he doesn't just say it in his mind, just say it in mind doesn't become, he has to say it. Okay, he says it that I'm gonna make it wajib on myself to fast for the next 3 days without any condition. Or it does with the condition. If I pass my exam, I'm gonna fast for 10 days next month. Then when that thing occurs, or when those days come, he has to fulfill them. Now, when is it necessary to fulfill a vow? It is said, when four conditions are found in that vow, then that vow has to be fulfilled. Number one, the thing that you want to do, similar to that, there is a wajib in that category. For example, if you say that if I pass my exam, I want to fast for 5 days, or I'm going to fast for 5 days. Now, fasting is such where you can find farz fasting, wajib fasting. In that category, there's also farz fast and wajib fast, etc. So this then you can vow to do that. But if in that category there is nothing like that, for example, if I pass my exam, I'm going to see five, six person in the hospital, then that thing is not a correct vow. Because visiting a sick person, there is no farz. It's always an optional act of ibadah. It is good, but it is not farz. There is no a time where to see a sick person is going to be a farz. It's always an optional thing. So if somebody specified such a thing in his vow, then that is incorrect vow. Yeah? Also, it is something that it is actually an ibadah in itself. Not something that it only becomes ibadah because you made intention. Eating food. Eating food is not ibadah, is it? Yes, if you eat it with sunnah, with the, it becomes an ibadah, but itself is not ibadah. Just like salah, it's actually there because it has been given to us because it's an ibadah. Recitation of the Quran, it's an ibadah. Yeah? But visiting sick person is not an ibadah. Seeing them, what can I say? Traveling, although traveling, if you do it with the right intention, do it properly, it's an ibadah, but it's not a farz, is it, to travel? So these type of things, you can't, if someone specifies a vow, that is a vow which is incorrect. Also, it can't be wajib from beforehand. Somebody says, if I pass my exams, then for the next 1 week, I'm going to do my 5 times salah. Hang on a minute, you've already got to do your 5 times salah. You've got to do anyhow. So what have you done extra? You have a vow, you've got to do that anyhow. So that vow is not correct. Understand? Also, the thing that you vowed, it can't be something which is impossible. If I pass my exams, I'm going to go to Saturn. Something, it's impossible, you can't do. So, in these kind of scenarios, basically, these four conditions have to be met before that vow, that nadr, is wajib. Yeah? Shall we start the next one? Or shall we leave for next week?
Depends how much.
Yeah.
Just one page. Because that is just one chapter in itself. It's one full chapter in itself. Huh? Yes.
I think only have developed.
ঠিক আছে Because this is talking about itikaf. So if we just start a bit, then I think we just leave the whole chapter. There's only one chapter left.
Sure.
We can finish that, inshallah, next week. Is there any questions?
If somebody's got an illness for a long time and he can't fast it, what he has to give a fidya, he has to give a sadaqa, what do
you think? That's it, he has to give fidya, sadaqa. Sadaqa fidya.
Fasting, I don't know, it's for the...
Is it lifelong?
Yeah.
He can never fast?
No, he can't because of the illness that he can't.
What illness has he got that he can't fast?
He's...
Hunger. Diabetic.
No, he's not diabetic, but you know, he has to eat his... I forgot the name of the...
Ulcer?
His stomach ulcer.
Stomach ulcer?
Mm. I guess it's...
He's very, 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 very
I'm not going to fast anymore, you know, my illness is going to get
worse.
If that's the case, then he has to give Sadaqah Fitr for every fast. So 30 Sadaqah Fitr or 29, whatever the case is. So Sadaqah Fitr for each fast.
And how much
on the estimation?
Sadaqah Fitr, what you give normally?
A day.
2.2. 2.6% a month. Yeah. For each fast.
It's like for 30 days or so.
Yeah.
Which is actually quite reasonable.
It's like giving charity anyway. It's the fancy
charity. Not much.
Yeah. But then obviously if they can do it in the winter instead in shorter time, then they should do that.
They have to do it. They have to do it. They can't do it long because of the illness or because of whatever. Then
I had a question.
Yeah.
Like on the topic of
that was quick. Well, this came in and came out again.
Why do you think so? I have a question for
that. Yeah.
So, I'm trying to convince one of my friends to fast, even though during like college, and because we've got college and then exam, and they're quite long and quite tense. So the main point is, like, obviously it's a long day, you might get a headache, you don't get much sleep, all that kind of stuff, and water. Like, what would be the best, I mean, because there's no, as you can see, there's no exemption. That's not a valid exemption from fasting yet, so it's still mandatory also for us to fast. What would be the best kind of advice? I gave him some ayat in the Quran, which kind of gives a good explanation, or it might help. But is there anything else? Do you want to read it actually? But no.
Well, from here, it's pretty hard. To read from here.
There you go.
Is that for me to keep? And whoever fears Allah and keeps his duty to him, taqwa Allah will make it for him.
Trying to justify, trying to give him some kind of, you know, you can't question the word in the Quran, innit? Trying to say, you know, despite the fact that you fast or whatever, you might.
How do I go up?
Scroll like this.
Oh, right, it's over the way.
He's reading the next message now. 2 grams of.
Yeah, that is a good height.
Is it? Anything else better which I can say or do? Because he's a bit iffy.
Well, it's in the hadith, but basically, one day a person missed without a valid. Sorry.
Who goes?
One day a person miss without a valid reason, that can never be regained, even if he wants to fast for throughout his whole life. One day of Ramadan he misses without a valid reason.
So what's the point of expiation then?
What I mean is that with the expiation, your responsibility is diminished. But the reward and the benefit that you will get by doing that can never be achieved. That can never be achieved. So, in terms of that, and also, the thing is that...
Because I think he's thinking quite tangibly, which I don't blame him. Because, you know, it's rational, kind of rational.
The thing is that
belief in the unknown is effectively kind of a little, and I don't know. Maybe just say that and we'll see what happens in it. At the end of the day, it's decision.
Yeah.
I can't force him to do anything.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that you can only tell him, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
And also, tell him, inshallah, you know, end of the day, whatever you do in life, you're going to always need the help of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Without the help of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, you won't be able to get anywhere. Right? So, if you want help, then you're going the wrong way about it. Okay? You can get all these degrees and everything, and if the outcome is no good, then what? If Allah ta'ala decided not to give you anything, so you'd be a loser.
Was he doing that? Is he working?
No, he's doing the same thing with me.
Oh,
okay.
Is he the same job?
Same job,
same
class,
same college, same whatever. Okay. If someone, you know, because of the illness, he break his fasting probably 15 or 20 years ago, and then he has to take this fasting to keep it or no?
Like he broke his fast because of?
Illness.
Okay.
Like 15 or 20 years ago, approximately.
Yeah, he still has to redo it. It's not like there's time limit. Isn't after 30 years, finish. It's like tax exemption. Only 6 years.
No, no, no. What happened to me because of it was like I was ill. In like 3 days, I didn't fast.
Mm-hmm.
Approximately about 19 years ago.
If it's you have to do it double. No, I'm only joking.
And then it's happened twice.
Yeah. See, I was right, double.
Well, I was ill because that's why I fall down unconscious for the because of the this prescription. I didn't fast for 2 weeks, and then it's happened after a few years for 3 days. It's like in total it's 18 days. I'll have to take those one or?
Yeah, 18 days. Not much.
But you didn't.
I'm sure you've got, plenty of investment like me. 18 days, no problem.
I remember.
You know this, I tell you, example. You know the brother who does Azan?
I did write down.
That Turkish guy?
Yeah.
For the last 3 months he's been fasting.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
This summer. He's been fasting. Even now he's fasting.
Why?
Yeah, it's true. He's
what do you mean, why? It's a good thing.
Why 3 months in a row?
Huh?
Why 3 months in a row?
He just wants to fast. He wants to fast from Rajab. Started fasting in Rajab. Shaban, because Rajab and Shaban is a virtuous month to fast. So he's fasting. Now he's fasting in Shaban.
To do something in excess.
Huh?
Isn't it bad to do things in excess?
Yeah, but he's got the willpower.
Is it 7 days a week?
He can do it. He's nothing wrong with him. What is excess for? It depends who is it for.
What's your question? I got two. Okay, the first one is...
What? You didn't have one? And suddenly two came up, okay.
First one's on the topic of travelling.
Okay.
Can't believe I got both of them. You know, like, how most of us go to work, right? We travel more than 55 miles, so technically, we're all musafir.
Yeah.
So then technically, we don't have to fast.
If you travel, if you start your journey before you.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
So you're going to have to ask your boss, can I start at 3 o'clock in the morning, please?
Okay.
Can I do night shifts?
It's just
because by the time you come back from night shift, the suhoor was starting to jump. So then you could not keep, you don't have to keep.
So
you come back, you sleep the whole day, you wake up, traveling and go back again.
So if you did travel the 4 year Sharia miles, but this was after Fajr, you are still obligated to fast.
Yes.
But say you can't get back home before iftar.
Yep.
Do you break your fast according to the local time in
where you are?
Where you are?
Yep.
Okay.
So if you're on the plane, you're going towards the east. By the time you landed, 3 hours. Yeah, we'll have it.
Because you're beating the sunset. Imagine that you're flying into the sunset, and the sun isn't setting.
It does happen. If you're traveling towards, say, for example, America,
yeah,
your fast can increase 24 hours.
You're better off going through the east, coming around again.
Just gotta wait, man. I'm waiting though. Not wait in the lobby. Okay, the second question is a bit more of a stupid one, but I just wanted to find out anyway, because you know how you mentioned one of the fidya payments, thing was to free a slave.
Yeah.
Do slaves exist like nowadays?
No.
So,
but 60 days fasting exists.
Is there anything written in the Quran about how the world will change, in terms of society and stuff? So obviously now, slaves don't exist.
But the actual injunction is still there. If a Muslim army was to conquer a non-Muslim country, right? For example, they went to another country. To give them da'wah, preach them the oneness of Allah. Okay? If they accept it, fine. No problem. They stay as it is. If they don't accept it, then they tell them, okay, you can stay whatever religion you want, but you live under the Muslim rule. Okay? And then you give tax, and then we will protect you. We will protect your women, we will protect your children, everything. You're allowed to live as you wish. But you would live under the Muslim Sharia law, okay? Your lives would be protected by the.
You could still practice.
You could still practice. You could do everything. You could eat pork, everything. You can drink wine, everything you can do, but you have to pay tax. And in the exchange of that tax, the Muslim ruler, by Sharia, would have to protect you, protect your land, protect everything. Everything still stays yours, but you don't even accept that as well. Then you have to come to war. Because you don't accept anything. You're not accepting Islam. You don't have to accept that. You're not accepting to stay under the Sharia law. Right? Basically, you're not going to give tax. And in Sharia, because you're not going to... So basically, you're a rebel. You want to do what you want. We want to maintain peace. So if you're not going to follow, we can't tell him to follow and not you follow. You do what you want. Everybody has to have one. So for that, you have to come within our banner. Okay, you do, in terms of your religion, you do what you want, but you do whatever the Sharia says. And Sharia says, if we say you're not allowed to have, brothels, you can't have brothels. It's just against the law. You want to drink, you can drink in your own house. You cannot.
Sharia says you can't drink, though.
But for non-Muslim, they're allowed.
How come they can't have brothels, but they can drink?
Sorry?
Because that's
changing
society.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, but surely drink alcohol.
Yeah, that's in your own home.
In your own vicinity.
Yeah. You can drink, you can have pork. It's in your own home. You can do all these things. But you can't do anything that will destroy the peace. Peace is something that is a community thing. You understand what I'm trying to say? Yeah. I and me and you, I can achieve so much peace by myself. But if my neighbor's constantly putting music all day long, then how am I going to get peace?
Yeah.
You understand? It's a community thing. Everybody has to play a part. So to maintain that peace, right? I say, okay, you do this, then you follow with us, you pay the tax, we protect you, that's it, finished. Your land. If they don't do that, then you're a rebel. Then we go to war. And then after war, if we win, their land will become the Muslim, become to the Muslims. Their women and children will become slaves.
Really?
Yeah. That is why it's still there. But if there's a treaty that you we're not going to make a claim, then the treaty will take place, because a Muslim never breaks their promises. So if there's a treaty, although you had the war, you won the war, they won't become slaves because there's a treaty. So they say there's this so-called human ruling, and everyone who signed to that, then maybe they know. But theoretically, this could happen. Their women could all become slaves.
And what about the men?
Men all become slaves, though. Everybody becomes slaves. So,
technically
if you want slaves, you can go to war. Yeah.
But, and how much tax he or she they have to pay to the Islamic Sharia law?
There's amount, basically, according to their means.
And how much? Not
there is much. It's all in the fiqh, but it's something that's not really talked about because it doesn't come up how, does it? But it's in there. It's not much. I think it's about 10%. Which is less than UK tax. Less than UK tax. UK tax is about 40%. 20% is your... You know how much you pay? Theoretically, you pay about 70% tax. You ask me why. 20% is national... I'm talking the basic tax, 20%. 12% is national insurance, 32%. Every time you buy petrol, that's 40%. Every time you buy something, if you add up everything, you pay about 70% tax. And it's so-called freedom. You pay 70% tax. It's not only you only pay 10% tax, and then you get protection, everything.
It's a good deal.
It's a good deal.
That's incredible. Is it in
the
Sharia? It's called tax or zakat?
No, zakat is for Muslims. Jizya. It's called jizya.
Ah, it's called jizya.
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 And zakat you cannot give to non-Muslims. Charity you can. Two different things. So your Muslims are advised to give both. To give the zakah and give charity.
Charity that's not zakah,
yeah,
that a Muslim gives can only be given to a Muslim.
No. Zakah can only be given to a Muslim. Charity can give it to anything. Anybody.
Is it?
Yeah. But Muslims are advised to give both.
But it's fard to give.
وَفِي أَمْوَالِهِمْ حَقٌّ لِلسَّائِلِ وَالْمَحْرُومِ. The Quran says that from your wealth, the people who beg, people who needy, people who don't have anything, non-Muslim or Muslim, you should give.
That's sadaqah, no?
That's called sadaqah. But sadaqah, again, is two types of sadaqah. One sadaqah is which you give because you fulfill a vow or something happened. For example, if I become better, I will give £10. That sadaqah has to be given to the poor. But you want to give just charity. Yeah, just out of the blue, you want to give charity. Somebody knocking on the door. Some organization. It could be a Christian organization, something. And so long that you know that they're not going to use it to propagate their deen, you can give it to them. If it's there to help the poor.
You know, do you propagate their deen? Don't they?
Huh?
Don't give it to guys who shout out
in time. See, the thing is that you know, there are.
They do, because
like the Red Cross.
Yeah.
Red Cross is actually.
They provide food and a Bible.
Yeah, the Red Cross is actually it's a Christian organization, which in the fundamentals is part of that. They don't exactly express it, but they have converted a lot of Muslims into non-Muslims. The poor Muslims who are very poor, they bribe them with food and money and say, look, if you become Christian, we'll give you this, we'll give you that. And in India and places like that, they have converted a lot of. Yeah. So it's hidden. Red Cross, the cross tells you everything. So Red Cross, what does that mean? So you got to look at the thingy. That's how it was formed. But they say, we give it to everybody. And you know what? The irony is that it's most of the Muslim countries that are poor. The very rich countries, then you got the very poor countries. You got Africa and all these poor. Let's say in India, bro.
So sadaqah is just normal charity, which is
to
give
them
to...
Yeah, the way actually you should say lillah.
Lillah, okay.
If you say lillah, then you know it definitely is for that. Okay. Sadaqah can have two meanings.
So,
how is it? Yeah, sadaqah is, like I said, sadaqah is you can say as if, which you can give to anybody, and there's one sadaqah where you can only give to the Muslims. Because it's for example, vow, or sadaqah fitr, you know, sadaqah zakah.
So what are the two? Can you struggle with the differences in sadaqah and charity? I know zakat is just normal charity, yeah?
Okay. Is this
you're
not
a Muslim to a Muslim? Yeah. That's gold. So, what's
it's
the
from
the,
yeah.
What's sadaqah exactly?
Like I said, sadaqah.
You got the one with the vow.
Yeah, you got one with the vow.
And then the other one is.
Otherwise, just is another way. Another is another word for Allah.
Okay, fine. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
But technically, the Red Cross would say the same for organisations like Islamic Aid.
Well, Islamic Aid is also. It's got that same principle to further Islam. What's wrong with that?
Exactly.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. Further Islam, which is a good thing. Yeah, so we help those kind of organisations. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, I know who you're trying to get at.
You know what I'm
saying. Yeah, yeah. But it's a fine. It's a good thing, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Any more questions?
Does it have to be Ramadan related?
Alright, then let's close the book. Non-Ramadan related now. Are you going to close this now?